chaos.
It's the most minimal beamer I could
manage.
I use a beamer for in a very minimalistic way.
Well, I would use a power beamer.
I don't use any of the structure stuff. The beamer. Yeah, exactly. I don't like all the fancy stuff. Okay, I think I'm ready.
Yeah,
The speaker is Professor William Stein, and I'm not sure where he's from.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about something that I hope will be, just making sure the screen size is good. I hope will be very accessible. So let me just tell a story. So I was teaching Math 168 last quarter, and this was a class on elliptic curves and modular forms for undergraduates. I had one undergrad and the rest were grad students, but it was a really fun class to teach. And one of the topics in the class was Dirichlet characters and Bernoulli numbers, and generalized Bernoulli numbers. And at one point, I wanted to talk about Bernoulli numbers, so I wanted to add them to SAGE, that is to say, add the computation of Bernoulli numbers to SAGE. And almost as I was about to do that, I received an email from David Joyner giving me some code to do Bernoulli numbers in SAGE and via GAP. So I tried it, and it seemed competitive. It was very similar in timing to Magma. But in SAGE, it's easy to try a lot of different programs to compute Bernoulli numbers. I'll actually skip back for a second and define them in a second. But you can try a whole bunch of different programs and see how long they take to compute Bernoulli numbers. And here's an example of computing the Bernoulli number, the 500th Bernoulli number, in a whole bunch of different systems. And in each case, before I computed the timing, I was sure to fire up the system so that there's no overhead in just starting up the program. If you were to just type A equals magma and time this, it might take a while because it has to start at magma, so you make sure to do that first. But you can see the timings. There are these numbers, there are rational numbers called Bernoulli numbers, and you can see that the 500th one in a reasonable amount of time, you can compute in all these different programs. Magma and GAP are very similar, but if you keep doing this for a while, you're suddenly shocked in finding that Paris computes them very, very fast compared to the other systems. So I noticed that, and then I thought, okay, I'll talk about Bernoulli numbers in my class, mention this fact, and maybe I can get a student to do a project on why this is the case. So now, back to the definition. So Bernoulli numbers are really easy to define, as you can see here. I tried to define them to my wife over the phone, and she told me to stop, because I wasn't so happy with power series and Taylor expansions. But all you do is take, they're defined in 1713, or at least published in 1713. Consider x over e to the x minus 1. It has some power series expansion, except that should be an x right there. Sorry, that t should be an x. Or t equals x. And the Bernoulli numbers are essentially the coefficients of that power series expansion normalized by n factorial. So that's it. The first few Bernoulli numbers are given here. Notice that a lot of them are zero. All the odd Bernoulli numbers except b sub 1 are equal to zero. And the even Bernoulli numbers, here they all seem to have a numerator of 1, but if you look much farther, you'll find that the numerators are quite large and very interesting. Bernoulli numbers are very central. There's a website that has the Bernoulli number bibliography, and it has over 1,000 papers listed on it. So these are papers that say something about Bernoulli numbers. So if you want to try to understand everything about Bernoulli numbers, you have quite a lot of work ahead of you. They come up all over mathematics and definitely all over number theory. One reason is that they give, via a fairly simple formula, the values of the Riemann zeta function at the even positive integers, as you can see here. And as I mentioned before, the Bernoulli numbers for n odd are all zero, except for the first one, so there's really no interest in those. But for the even ones, they have a very close relationship to values of the Riemann zeta function. By the way, if you look at the Riemann zeta function for large positive integer values, it's almost 1. It goes pretty quickly to 1. So this Bernoulli number, B2n, it's very close to, as a real number, it's very close to this number, or rather the inverse of this number. So this is basically 1. But really, the Bernoulli numbers aren't interesting so much for their magnitude or for their first few digits, but for the actual way that it primes that divide the numerators of them and so on. So that's where the deep arithmetic is. But just as numbers, the Bernoulli number bn is, well, it's 2n. If you just solve this and you don't care about the sign, it's simply 2n factorial over 2 pi to the n times zeta of n. And again, zeta of n is basically 1 as soon as n gets at all large as a real number. Also, Bernoulli numbers are related to values of zeta at negative integers via the functional equation. And there you are. Zeta of 1 minus n is minus bn over n. So again, here are some timings. If you go a little farther, It gets pretty bad in Maple, which is often not the speed champ when you try to do number theory type things, which is a little surprising, but true. Seems like it's pretty slow at everything in number theory that I ever try. But in any case, it's the coming in last place here. Maxima, not so good either. Magma is pretty good. It's better than Gap. Mathematica, this timing is from Mathematica 5.1. A few minutes ago, we tried timing Mathematica 5.2, and Mathematica 5.2 is similar in time to Perry, actually, for this calculation. Almost identical. So Mathematica 5.2 has improved via some method. Again, Perry, though, doesn't take any time at all to compute the 1,000th Bernoulli number. Let me just show you one of these so you can see what these numbers are like. So here we are in Sage. This just calls Perry. So here's the 100th Bernoulli number, the 1,000th one. So you just sort of scrolls right by. It's a big number. The number of digits of the whole thing is 1,790. The 2,006th Bernoulli number, I mean, you're not going to get much out of that. It's just some huge thing. I'll shrink the font so you can maybe see it. So there's the 2,006th Bernoulli number, et cetera, et cetera. You can see that Perry calculates them almost instantly. It's not using a table or anything either.
Does it end divided by 6?
Indeed it does. It's actually a common thing to happen. I think there's a theorem that there's a positive proportion of Bernoulli numbers with denominator 6. The denominator by the, there's a, well, I'll say some more about the denominators. That's one of the standard old-fashioned facts about Bernoulli numbers, is an identification of the denominator in a very precise way. Some programs don't compute Bernoulli numbers quickly. Some programs do. I wonder why. I just decided that all my students were doing projects, so I said, does anybody want to dive into the Perry source code, figure out what the heck is going on, and tell me as a student project? And Kevin, who's in the back room, Kevin McGann, who's a first-year grad student here, spent a lot of time doing exactly this. I'll go back to these two slides in a second. I'm going to do this a little bit out of order from my slides. Here is the Perry source code for computing Bernoulli numbers. And it's not very pleasant to look at. And it does have some comments that might help you understand what's going on. For example, 2 times 3 is 6. I wouldn't have known that, maybe, I don't know. Also, this skip one is very helpful. And Klaus von Stott, that is actually helpful. And then there's this really helpful comment, 1.712086, some mysterious constant over here, equals 3?. So, and that's the extent of the comments for the most part. So apparently, I guess somebody else, either they're lazy or, I mean, the person who actually wrote this is Karim Belabash. So maybe, I don't know, maybe somebody else added that comment or he got tired and just put 3?. But So Kevin looked at this. There's also one function that's called here, which is actually where all the time really is taken, and that's ind s zeta Euler. This computes the value to very high precision of 1 over zeta of n for n a positive integer. And that function's given on the next slide. It doesn't really do anything particularly clever. It's simply, this code, if you look at it carefully, it's simply computing the Euler product with a certain number of primes. The interesting part in here is how the accuracy and precision is determined in different ways depending on which factor you're looking at, and in general, in this code. So, unfortunately, there's no real proof at all that any of the precisions that are being computed here and there are right. And that's just, I mean, that's frustrating, but that's what you get. Let me move this down a little. So this is the Perry code. It's 2 pages, and this does essentially everything to compute Bernoulli numbers very quickly. Okay? And you might wonder, what in the heck do you get out of this code? And that's what Kevin very nicely summarized in 2 slides. But just going back a little, so Kevin and I wrote to Karim Belabash and asked, okay, or actually I wrote to Henri Cohen and asked, no, sorry, I wrote to Karim Belabash and I asked, what's going on with Bernoulli numbers in Perry? As you can see here. After we figured out what was happening, we wanted to know where it came from. Is this just something you read in a paper? Did you come up with it yourself, et cetera? And he answered that Henri Cohen did. He invented the algorithm and wrote the initial implementation, and then I wrote the current one, which was just an optimization. Then somebody else named Bill Daly independently came up with it. And I think their interest was in speeding up computation of zeta. Because if you want to compute zeta at a positive integer, you have one choice. You can use the Euler product. You could also compute the Bernoulli number exactly, and then compute a huge approximation to that rational number. And that would give you zeta at a positive integer, assuming you could compute pi to high precision, which you can do. So you can view this formula from two points of view. If you want zeta of 2006 to immensely high precision, the way to go is to compute the Bernoulli number, then compute pi to really high precision. So I think that was a motivation. And in fact, these two guys are, I guess Kareem isn't aware of another website, very hard to find, with the amazingly mysterious name of Bernoulli.org. If you go there, I'm being cynical when I say it's hard to find, it's very easy to find. But if you go there, this guy, Bernd Kellner, says that he also computes Bernoulli numbers quickly. And in fact, he's computed the Bernoulli number B sub 2 million, which is almost the world record largest Bernoulli number that's been computed. And he has a program that he makes available on his website just as a binary. You can't look at how it's actually implemented. And he claims it does everything up to 1 million extremely quickly. If you actually download it, that's not really true. But it's actually somewhat slower than Perry, maybe 5 times slower on my computer. And again, the program's closed source, so you don't really know what it does. But he has a manual, which is a couple of pages. And in the manual, it describes that he uses this relationship in some way. He doesn't say anything about bounds or why, you know, what he's doing is correct. Also, if you look at the Maxima documentation, it's claimed that there's a function in there that uses this relation to compute Bernoulli numbers quickly. Except when I try to run the function, it just crashes in all the maximas I have. So maybe this is just left over from a long time ago. So it seems like maybe at least 5 different people have independently thought about, or somewhat independently thought about this. 4. 1, 2, Bill Daly. So 4 different groups of people have thought about this. So here's an algorithm that was in Kevin McGowan's project, and it has the nice advantage that he rigorously proved that you need to use a certain number of terms of the Euler product to get a certain bound. I think this is not as good of a bound as what you get in, is what Perry actually uses. Perry uses something more clever. But here it is. This is very easy to implement, and assuming that you work with real numbers to sufficiently large precision so that your answer is right, and for that you have to know something about the number of digits of B sub n, and I'll say a little bit about that in a minute. This will give you the Bernoulli number B sub n. So what do? First you compute 2n factorial over 2 pi to the n to sufficient precision, and you have to know about computing pi to high precision, but that's a standard, very well-studied thing. You compute the denominator of the Bernoulli number. That this is the exact denominator of the Bernoulli number is the Clausen von Stauff congruence, so it's a very classical fact. You compute this bound n. This is the number of terms in the Euler product. Well, if you compute the Euler product using this number of primes, then you can prove that your approximation is sufficiently good to compute the Bernoulli number. And Kevin wrote that down in his project. And then you just put it together. This is just computing exactly the formula I showed you before. Okay? And this does, except for the problem that in Perry, I think they use a better bound, this is very fast in practice. You might ask, how good is it really? I mean, I just showed you a few examples for small. And how far can you go with this method? So, it's a little annoying. I have all the slides I need, but I don't know what order they're in. I'll have to search around for a second. Let's see. All right, so here's something. This is about the largest Bernoulli numbers computed. And I think really all these algorithms for computing large Bernoulli numbers, when you want to compute one large one, rely on this zeta function observation, this relation between the zeta function and the Bernoulli number. So the biggest one that's ever been done by anyone, as far as I could tell after scouring the web for many hours, was is B sub 5 million. And this was done just a few months ago. And it seems like the only thing people ever report about large Bernoulli numbers is the number of digits of the numerator for some reason. I mean, it'd be nice to factor the numerator, but that's kind of ridiculous. So the Bernoulli number B sub 5 million has 27 million digits. So these are really, really, really big, big numbers. I think that Kevin and I convinced ourselves that the Bernoulli number B sub n has about n log n digits. So Certainly any algorithm for computing Bernoulli numbers will be exponential in the number of digits of the input, because the output is exponential in the number of digits of the input. Also, there's a sequence in Sloan's tables, and it, the nth term of the sequence is the number of digits of the Bernoulli number b sub 10 to the n. So this table goes up to 6, and you can find the same table on other websites. And the number of digits of b sub a million is 4,767,554, and there's no entry for 7. So that suggests that a nice challenge would be to compute the Bernoulli number b sub 10 million, because then you could fill in the next blank in the table. In fact, there's a much easier way to find the number of digits and find the next blank in the table. Use the formula for b sub n. You know the denominator. So in order to find the number of digits of this number, multiply the number, the Bernoulli number, by d sub n, take log base 10 of it, and then take the ceiling. And you might think that it's going to be impossible to take log base 10 of it because you have zeta here you have to worry about. But think about the precision that you need log base 10 of a number to in order to determine the number of digits. You need like you need just a few. You hardly need any precision at all. So all you need is zeta to some small amount of precision. So if you so in order to figure out what this is, since we know the denominator exactly, just compute log whatever base, it doesn't matter, of the other part in the formula for b sub n. And actually, no, I mean, if you knew log base whatever of b sub n, then you'd be fine. So here's how you do that. Well, just use properties of logarithms. You get this, and the hardest part in computing this is, well, you might think log of zeta n, but that's really just zero for our purposes. I mean, it's 0.000000. This is the hard part right here. You have to sum from 1 to n log of m, and that, of course, does take some time, but it's not really that bad. I mean, imagine summing the logs of the numbers up to a million. That's not that part of a thing to do, and that takes far less than a second. I mean, it's like 0.00 seconds. So I implemented this, and in 10 minutes, I got the next two entries in Sloan's tables. So that should be in Sloan's tables. So here they are. So for example, the 100 millionth Bernoulli number has 67 million and so on digits. For what it's worth, I don't know. I feel like this is not the sort of math I ever do, but I'm doing it for some fun reason. I don't know. Here's another thing. I looked all over the web for just a table of Bernoulli numbers, because I generally like to make tables, and Bernoulli numbers are constant coefficients of modular forms, so it would make sense that that I'd like to know if there's a table of these constant coefficients of Eisenstein series. And I couldn't find really any tables at all, except maybe a table up to 50 or 100, or a table I already made that wasn't very good. I was a little surprised by that, and I'd love to be proven wrong, but I just couldn't find anything non-trivial. I did find this statement, though. It's kind of a funny statement. The only known Bernoulli numbers b sub n having prime numerators occur for these values of n. If you look back at n equals 10, you see that, oh, shit, isn't here, sorry. I'll just compute it. It's not so hard. So, the numerator is 5. So there are a couple of cases where you don't have more than one prime dividing the numerator. And he says that he checked this for every n up to 55,274. And the guy who did this is the guy that makes, math, Eric Weinstein, who makes math real, a funny guy. So apparently, he must have computed all the Bernoulli numbers up to 55,274. So I don't know if he saved them or anything. So I thought it'd be fun to just use this new computer I got and, you know, type a couple of commands and get a bigger table than him. So I ran it for the last 2 days, and I got all of them up to 94,000. So I made just a table. Each entry is very, very compressed, and I'll just run it to 100,000 and put it on the web. But it already takes 3.4 gigabytes for this, so it'll be a little 4 gig table. But if you want to do some experiment that involves the exact Bernoulli numbers up to 100,000, then you'd want to use this table because you can get all of them instantly. Here's something that you're probably wondering about in case you already know. The most famous person, I think, for computing lots of Bernoulli numbers that actually is done in an interesting context is Joger with his collaborators. And what they do is they're interested in finding irregular pairs. So these are pairs of, a prime number and a Bernoulli number where the prime divides the numerator of the Bernoulli number. And I guess you guys used a supercomputer at Cornell first in the early 90s to compute all irregular pairs up for p up to a million. And
since supercomputer only made it to 400,000.
Okay. It made it, so what did you use after?
A bunch of workstations.
Okay, cool. So in extremely, in a two-sentence summary, from the point of view of just computing Bernoulli numbers, this is interesting because what they do is they think about how to compute Bernoulli numbers modulo a prime. So if you wanted to compute some huge Bernoulli number, one approach might be to compute that Bernoulli number mod a huge number of primes. And I mean a huge number, because again, these Bernoulli numbers have extraordinarily large number of digits. But you could, in theory, at least compute your Bernoulli number mod a large number of primes, then use the Chinese remainder theorem to recover the exact Bernoulli number. What they do is pretty simple to describe modulo the little other tricks that take some more work to describe. But the core of the idea is simply to work modulo P, the hard part, so the Bernoulli numbers are just the coefficients essentially up to the factorial of x over e to the x minus 1. And the hard part is computing the inverse of the power series for e to the x minus 1. But what Joe and these other guys did was use Newton iteration, and they just make the observation that if you have an approximation to the inverse of a power series, then, and you call it approximation g, then h equals 2g minus fg squared is twice as good of an approximation. So you just iterate this log of sort of your input number of times, and you very quickly get this massive power series that that is this inverse. It's much better than solving a bunch of linear equations or using recurrence to get each of the coefficients. Also, they exploit, here you have a couple of polynomial multiplications, or at least you have, I guess, two, a squaring and multiplication here. And you exploit fast Fourier methods to do that quickly. So there's a lot of methods for multiplying polynomials better than just the naive method, especially when the polynomials have huge degree. So that's relevant to everything I'm saying, but it's really a different thing because here so nowadays, how far do you think you could go? Is it like around 10 to the 7th if for a given p? Yeah, so you could probably do 10. I guess that's what you told me on the phone, up to 16 times 10 to the 6th. So. So if you're interested in finding a Bernoulli number modulo a fixed prime, and that prime isn't too big, then you can do it up to about 10 billion. If you're interested in finding an exact Bernoulli number, somebody has done it up to 5 million, so that's reasonable. So these are all kind of on the same order.
How about periodic expansions?
That's a very good question, and I'll say a little more about that later. I'd really like to know more. I think that work of your students is extremely relevant to that question. I'm not sure how.
These periodic functions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So now getting back to the talk. So I've talked about Bernoulli numbers a whole bunch, and these are kind of interesting to me. They're the coefficients. For me, they're the coefficients of Eisenstein. Well, the constant coefficients of level one Eisenstein series. But the reason that I mainly am interested in Bernoulli numbers is. I'm interested in constant coefficients of Eisenstein series of higher level, and those are related in a fairly simple way to generalized Bernoulli numbers. Here's the definition of generalized Bernoulli numbers. Here, chi is a Dirichlet character with, I think I can define anything, so I'll say with modulus f, but the f suggests I really want a primitive character, although it's not crucial for the definition. Well, it doesn't matter if I include extra ones because these chi's are all zero, right? Except possibly when f equals one and then I sum over nothing and I get an incorrect answer. And I'll assume that it's a non-trivial character, so that's not a problem. So that's a definition, and it looks very similar to the other one. The only difference is that you sum over values of the character. So notice that the coefficients on the left, these are algebraic integers. They lie in a cyclotomic field. And that implies that the bn chi, these generalized Bernoulli numbers, are also algebraic integers that lie in a cyclotomic field. Let me just show you a couple for fun. So in Sage, I can make a Dirichlet group. So if I use a smaller font, so say the group of Dirichlet characters of modulus 13. So there it is, group of Dirichlet characters of modulus 13 over the cyclotomic field of order 12. That means Q joins zeta 12 and degree 4. And then I can get the generator of that. And that's a Dirichlet character that's described by this matrix. In this case, it's a 1x1 matrix that says that it takes a minimal generator of z mod 13 z star to zeta 12 and the extent. And now I can ask for the Bernoulli number, Bernoulli, say b2. And I get 0, and b3 is, there it is, so there's an algebraic integer. And it's, you can see it. There's zero, so it depends on the character, but this character is an odd character. So the odd Bernoulli numbers are the ones you're interested in. The even ones are all zero. So there's another one. But you can tell this is not a very, there's something bad about this, because look at how long it's taking. It's already taking a third of a second to do kind of a tiny Bernoulli number, 0.45 seconds. And the implementation here is not incredibly clever, so it doesn't use any analytic methods. There's again a relationship between L functions and generalized Bernoulli numbers, which goes way, way back and has been well studied by various people in the context mainly of p-adic L functions. But at the negative integers, the Dirichlet L function, this is very similar to the Riemann zeta function if you don't know, but with p replaced by chi of p times, or there's a chi of p stuck right next to p. But I'll assume everyone knows what L chi is. So very similar to before, there's this relationship. And then there's a whole theory here that's extremely popular that involves p-adically interpolating the function that you get from these generalized Bernoulli numbers. And there's hundreds of pages of papers that discuss congruences between generalized Bernoulli numbers. They're very relevant for the construction of Kubota-Leopold p-adic L functions and so on. So there's a long history of studying generalized Bernoulli numbers and tons of work, and certainly interest for a lot more reasons than just computing modular forms in computing Bernoulli numbers. By the way, here's a formula you can find essentially in Miyake for an Eisenstein series attached to a pair of characters and a weight. And the constant term of the Eisenstein series, in at least when the conductor of chi is, or when chi is the trivial character, is minus bk psi over 2k. So it's a Bernoulli number divided by 2k. And it's a theorem that if you take all of these Eisenstein series together in the space in which they lie and then take appropriate images by replacing q by powers of q, then you get a basis for the Eisenstein subspace of classical modular forms of even integer weight with given level and character. So, I mean, it's exactly this slide that I used to compute that space. So it's crucial for me to be able to compute these very quickly, just to compute modular forms. And of course, computing Eisenstein series is one approach to computing a lot of modular forms. Another reason I'm personally interested in Bernoulli numbers is that if you look at J1 of P, the Jacobian of X1 of P, then it has a subgroup generated by cusps. And some of the cusps are rational and some of the cusps aren't rational. But if you take just the ones that are rational, then there's a description of the structure of that group in Qbert Lane. And in there, you'll find that the order of that group is as given here. So if you look closely at Qbert Lane, you find that that's the order. So it's a product really of all the Bernoulli numbers, B2 chi, as you vary over characters chi. I obviously want also that the chi are even. Otherwise, you get zero. But you're right, the slide is wrong. I prepared this in somewhat of a rush. So with the obvious ones that you would leave out here. And the reason I make this conjecture is because, well, it's nice that I was able to compute lots of generalized Bernoulli numbers, so I was able to compute what this number is. Then I computed via a completely different method an upper and lower bound on the actual order of this torsion subgroup. And in almost all cases, the upper and lower bounds were the same, and they agreed with this. So I made this conjecture. It's just the exact analog of what Maser proved for J0 of P. Yes, please.
So this is somehow also the two-dimensional analog of the class number formula, which gives you the minus ideal class group in terms of the products of B1 chi.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I wish I had. So this is written down in a paper with Conrad and Yuksevin that I wrote, and I really wish I had written that in the paper. I didn't realize that. So it was a product of, well, you have to tell me more afterwards.
Right. And I have another question. So
yes, please.
Do you split this formula up into chi components? So you will have a G action on the left-hand side.
In the conjecture, I don't, but I don't see any reason not to do so.
Yeah.
There's a chi action on the torsion. So.
For that, you would need Euler systems.
Yes.
To prove that.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's, I think it's a really nice conjecture, and it's really the, one of the places in which I thought a lot of, one of the reasons I thought a lot about computing Bernoulli numbers was in order to get data for this conjecture. Mm-hmm. So, although I have to admit that the chi and the p, I mean, these aren't very big. You don't need to be fast for this, because as soon as p gets at all large, you can't really compute very much. I checked this for a p up to about 150. So. These J1 of p is a huge genus. It's like p, O of p squared almost. Actually, O of p, 5p. OK, so here's one way to compute b and chi. Basically, you probably don't want to read all of this, but all it says is you use the definition in terms of series, but you do it in a clever way to avoid any arithmetic in a cyclotomic field until the very last step when you do some very easy arithmetic in a cyclotomic field. So all this is a way of avoiding doing any polynomial arithmetic in anything but Q. And it's nice that this works, but this is what I implemented in Sage. Except I didn't use Newton iteration to find the inverse, which I should do. So basically, you compute a whole bunch of products of e to the ax times the usual Bernoulli number power series. And then you take a linear combination of the eighth coefficients, or various you can take the linear combination of the jth coefficients of these products, and that gives you the generalized Bernoulli number. The linear combinations, though, have coefficients in the cyclotomic field. But this isn't so bad. I mean, the arithmetic here isn't very bad. It's just multiplying a rational number by an element of a cyclotomic field and adding. So in fact, it's not even, it's just vector, it's just a linear combination of vectors, if you like. You don't even have to multiply any two elements of a cyclotomic field. So this is pretty good. But one wonders, certainly, is there a better way to compute Bernoulli numbers, compute generalized Bernoulli numbers, that's analogous to what's done in Paris for the normal Bernoulli numbers. That could, I mean, if there were a really fast way of computing Bn chi better than doing this, then that might be really relevant to calculations involving p-adical functions, for example, and certainly for computing Eisenstein series. And I asked Karim exactly this question, and his answer is not to my knowledge. So, unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be one that's known. And then I asked Kevin to look into it for his project, and at present, it's not clear. So here's what happens. I mean, it's not hard to write down a formula. The question is, can you compute all the quantities in the formula more quickly than you can compute Bn chi? And let's just assume for now, I'm actually almost done with this talk, so I'm going to finish a little early, but let's assume for now that chi is a primitive character, and just for simplicity of notation, define k and chi to be this easy to compute, fairly easy to compute quantity. Of course, the factorial could take a little time, but factorials really are negligible compared to a certain other quantity appearing here. So you can compute everything here easily, pretty elementary. I here is square root of minus 1. A power of pi, this is a Gauss sum for your character. Computing all this would even be very interesting when chi is a quadratic character, in which case the Gauss sum is very easy to compute. You just have to figure out what a certain sign is. But then there's this ln chi bar. And I am a complete amateur at computing ln chi bar, as I discovered today, because if you just try using the Euler product, it doesn't converge very quickly, because it bounces all over the place. So it's nothing like the usual Riemann zeta function, where the Euler product does converge incredibly quickly. Just empirically and, I guess, theoretically, it just doesn't converge as, it converges, but it doesn't converge nearly as nicely. So the thing is, I just don't know, I don't know if there's a really fast way to compute ln chi bar. When I looked at Kevin's project, which wrote this down, I hoped that I would find a Perry command called you know, Ellen Kai Bar or something. And I was disappointed that I couldn't seem to find one in Perry. So now the experts in the room, I'm just going to give you a second to think if you know anything about this.
Well, computing any L-series can be converted into exponentially converging sums, but I guess n is large. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, n here is, think of it being like 10,000, something like that. Here's another product that's useless, almost useless. It works, but it's really slow. Like you use 10,000 primes and you get a couple of digits. If you can compute Ellen Kai bar quickly though, then you can compute the Bernoulli number, probably. Certainly if Kai is a quadratic character, so there's no issue of recognizing an algebraic integer, it's not really a problem. So first, it's easy to write down a denominator. There's a simple formula for an integer d, so that when you multiply bn chi by d, you get an algebraic integer. This is just an analog of the Clausen von Staudt congruences. And so you have that. So you can multiply by that. And then if it's a quadratic character, you're getting a rational number in the end. So you just have to compute this and get some rational number. Unfortunately, again, I don't know. I don't know how quickly you can compute that rational number. I mean, I don't know how quickly you can compute ln chi bar in order to get that rational number.
If chi is a quadratic character, can't you view the L function as a quotient of zeta functions? Maybe it's hard to compute the zeta function of the upper field, but then by that, I don't know. The L function is the quotient of.
Yeah. I've been thinking about doing little things like that, and that's a good idea. Yeah. I mean, you're completely right. And actually, you don't need to be quadratic to do that, do you?
Well,
there's three quantities here. There's n, there's the conductor of chi, and there's the order of chi. Mm-hmm. So what domain do you really care about?
All of them, but I'm interested in any of them. So one in particular would be quadratic, and say something there. Another would be, like with the torsion thing I just showed you before, then your chi is pretty large order. The n is 2, always. So there's just depends on the application. But I think anything at all would be nice to improve what I currently have, which is just using these series. So now my last slide is, another completely different approach might be to compute. So you have a denominator times bn chi, the resultant algebraic integer. Compute it mod p using the power series, but make sure you compute the power series in as clever a way as you can, a la kind of like what Joe did, and then use the Chinese remainder theorem to recover the denominator times bn chi. And then you're set. You have to think a little bit about what p means here, because this might be an algebraic integer. And then, as we've just been discussing, there's a lot of thought about computing these, though. I've always thought about computing ln chi bar at where n is like 1, or some critical value. Here n is somehow an easy value, it's really big, but it doesn't seem so easy to me. So that is the end of my talk. So are there any comments or questions? I'm going to stop a few minutes early. Just again, reporting on a student project. So. Yes, please.
Is the formula for computing generalized Bernoulli numbers as a sum over values of Bernoulli polynomials?
Uh-huh.
And those coefficients are just regular Bernoulli numbers?
That's right.
Is that too many computations? Is that slowing down too much?
I've seen that and I don't know. I mean, in this algorithm that I wrote down here, it's similar in that. This is a sum over n things that are fairly, that are kind of like the usual ones. But how would you compute the Bernoulli polynomials in the first place?
You just compute the coefficients once using your fast method for computing ordinary Bernoulli.
So you can get, how would you get the Bernoulli polynomials from the fast method for computing the usual Bernoulli numbers?
Because you can determine the coefficients
from a whole bunch of different Bernoulli numbers.
Okay.
Might work, yeah. There are a lot of different possibilities that should be investigated. I mean, basically this talk is just a way to formulate clearly this question. There's the thing with Bernoulli numbers is there's so much to know in that a million different things you can do. And some combination of them can give you something better. And of course, you always run into the fact that these things are big. I mean, at the end of the day, if I compute a Bernoulli number, they're big for non-trivial characters. So they're kind of big. That's an issue that will always be at the center. But yes, I like your idea. I'll look at that. But I can't see off the top of my head whether or not it's worse or better. I do like it though because it avoids having. So at this, I can't see any way to get information about these sufficient information about these products from knowing how to compute usual Bernoulli numbers quickly. Whereas what you're saying, using the Bernoulli polynomials does give you a hope to do that, to just use the normal Bernoulli numbers. So, other ideas or questions?
Does RE do anything about Shintani's generalizations of these Bernoulli numbers? So if you move up from Q to, say, a real quadratic, mm-hmm. it has to be totally real. Mm-hmm. Then Shintani cooked up this generalization of the Bernoulli polynomials, and the mm-hmm. values of negative integers give you a generalization of the classical Bernoulli numbers, mm-hmm. and you can come up with theoretical functions by interpolating those.
So right, it's sure.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep.
I'm just wondering, so if we move from Q to a real quadratic field,
yeah.
and forget characters, because uh-huh. characters seem to make the problem very difficult. Mm-hmm. Just classical Shintani Bernoulli mm-hmm. numbers. Have mm-hmm. you tried? I mean, do you know if RE does that?
Well, Perry doesn't do that much, so I don't know. I mean, it doesn't even do Bernoulli numbers with character. I don't think Perry does anything with Bernoulli, Shintani Bernoulli numbers.
That would be very interesting yeah. because you see, I mean, so these Bernoulli numbers show up in the classical Stickelberger yeah. theorem. Mm-hmm. The new ones, the Shintani mm-hmm. ones, show up in the more starting.
Do you know how to compute them?
I don't know how to compute them. Uh-huh. I mean, I know the formulas, but I don't know how hard it is to implement them.
Well, we should talk about this.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? So I think it would be nice as a challenge for somebody to compute B sub 10 million. And I don't know what the best way to do it would be, if it's using an analytic method or a multi-modular method or what. I don't know if multi-modular methods can be competitive at all with analytic methods. It's unclear to me. I mean, I think with multi-modular methods is you can't just compute the power series even using Newton iteration and characteristic zero because you'll run out of memory. But with multi-modular methods, you don't have that problem because you throw away everything up to the Bernoulli number that you want to compute at each step. So it's kind of nice because you know how much you've got and you'll know exactly when you'll be finished. But we thought a while about using, say, Kummer congruences and a big table of Bernoulli numbers up to 100,000. But the ironic thing is that if you use every single prime up to 100,000 and multiply those together, you don't get very much compared to the size of the actual Bernoulli number you want to compute. There just aren't that many small primes. As if we could find some more small primes, that would help.
Could you combine something where using knowledge about a bunch of small primes, you don't have that because
do you know how to do that? Because I've always felt like there should be a way to combine knowing the first few digits of a number with knowing it module a lot of primes. But I think that only works if you're in the first few digits on the right base. Do you have any thoughts about that?
No,
Okay. I mean, if you know a number mod a large power of 10, then you're okay. Or if you work if you know your number mod p1 through pn, then you work in base p1 times pn, times up to pn, and that would be good. But, it feels like there should be something like that, but I don't really know how to do it. So many thanks for your comments and feedback. I hope that everything was easy to understand.
So if you know your number modulo 100,000.
Everything's in phase two.
The computer's all in phase two.
You're writing it down, phase two or something.
Yeah.
Cool, so I like.
Yeah.
You missed it. But for continuing modular forms, it's not bad at all, because usually the weight is pretty small. So, depends which direction you're going. For example, if you're going to say weight 2, then one is always 2. So maybe this is I believe that when I expected that.
Some people couldn't
just remember that's how it usually gets.
You need to send email.
I mean, I've just been in
this
But the saving a factor of 6 in your digits or so.
So here's the...
Does it tell you how many params you're using?
Yes. Well, first, there's... You can kind of figure it out. So here's the number of primes that we used, which was sort of... So we can, with not working very hard, we could prove that this many primes worked. Where, I mean, that's really not that big.
So K is the size.
I think there's,
D is...
So K is about the number of digits.
Yeah.
And D is negligible.
D is the number of digits.
So it's, it takes a number of...
Yes, his co-authors having all sort of kind of
he's a electrical engineer.
And number 10. Just in number 10 to approximately. No, a little bit. E pi isn't that big.
Yeah. I mean, it's like 10,000, 50,000, that sort of thing. When for reasonable values of capital of little n.
So actually, how is their algorithm?
Yeah, so you're plugging.
Well, this is 7 years ago.
Yes. So you're interested in multiplying out p's, so the p of the n is smaller, significantly smaller than the number of digits. Yes. Does your program include a test as to how close to the ceiling you are when you're writing down the number of digits? There's always the bare chance that if you're really, really close to the ceiling, that the overflow kicks you up a digit if you don't test.
Yeah. So we don't. So So first, there are a couple of different programs. The Perry program doesn't explain how any of it works, and it's not in any. I mean, you saw all the Perry source code right there. It doesn't have any comments really, and I have no idea how they arrived at claimed precision bounds. And it's just completely mysterious. And I wouldn't be surprised if I take my table, which I made using Perry, run some tests on it, and find it's wrong.
You haven't checked program against their program to see if you get the same answers.
Mine's, well, there's interdependencies, and mine's a little slower.
Oh, but you're just calling
mine's like,
first,
well, no, I have a program that it calls Perry only for computing certain things.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, Perry's is closed.
I guess I have, I mean, I have various versions, but to make it really fast, it uses Perry for certain parts of the calculation. But the real test to do is just to take the numbers that come out of Perry via this analytic method and then check Kummer congruences, for example. It's very unlikely that an analytic formula is going to give you something that satisfies
if you pass some Kummer congruences, you're pretty safe.
Yeah, so I'll test that on the table that I'm making, which I haven't done yet. I wouldn't be surprised to find a bug in Perry via that test, though. And I will see.
Do they have the right number of digits? That would be a gross error, I suppose, if they didn't have the right number of digits.
I haven't checked that. This thing with this formula for the number of digits, which I guess I put. I mean, I was trying really hard to compute.
Fantastically, terms from log zeta, I would think.
Well, this is that. I mean, this is
that's so small.
This is one point and then thousands, you know, thousands of zeros, and then the first digit. So,
well, the log eliminates the one. So,
yeah.
Log zeta is n to a lot of digits.
I mean, the
sure
thing is, this with this here is, well, to the precision you're computing,
it must be
irrelevant.
Yeah. It must be.
But
unless you're really, really unlucky,
yeah,
that is near the ceiling.
So what was your interest in
that? It isn't going to change the answer.
Oh,
yeah.
Lots of things. I did signal processing.
And I mean, you can compute each of these to say 100 bits of precision, and that's easy. I mean, it's not really that hard. I only realized to do this sort of right at the. I was trying really hard to compute b sub 10 million, or find a good way to do that, and then I realized you can easily just get the number of digits that way. But I only realized that just when I was about to fall asleep last night. So
I guess if you calculated two or three digits past the decimal point, then that would assuredly tell you.
Yeah. Well,
your error is not going to wipe you out,
yes,
unless you were very, very unlucky and it was 999.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not. I mean, this is not a complicated numerically unstable type calculation here, I think. I mean, these two cancel out, and it's sum of log of them minus n log pi. By the way, do you have any idea how to compute this?
That log is n factorial, somehow more efficiently than just summing logs of the number.
Yeah, because I did this in 10 minutes for the next two entries. The next entry after that I didn't do. It seemed to take forever, simply because of doing that sum. So I wonder if there's a clever trick. I mean,
a factor of 10 each time.
Yeah, yeah, it was a little bit more, it was at least a factor.
Well, it was, you know, it was also tricky.
But it wasn't like.
So I wonder if there's a trick.
I would say
that's the hard part.
I would say there's some chances. So you, but you want to know it to zillion digit accuracy.
No, you don't, well.
Oh, no, this is just the number of digits.
Yeah, we need like 3 digits of accuracy.
And so that, yeah. I mean, I'm sure you can see maybe it wasn't.
So you're talking about an answer that's maybe 10 million, 20 million.
That's right.
Cow IT.
Yeah.
And then
it's just log of n factorial. Compute log of n factorial to reasonable number of digits of accuracy.
And yet he wasn't mentioned on that, and he's the chief scientist.
I'm egotistical enough to think that I can
confuse
that.
No, I don't think that.
I'm sure. This is just the most obvious first thing that came to mind, which is already enough to do a couple of things.
I spent an awful lot of time accelerating things.
That does seem like you'd think that.
I'll tell you what occurs to me at the moment.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, well,
I mean, there's lots of, maybe there's some tricks that involve factoring and that break this up more and there's some combined. Yeah.
So I would think the Shintani number is just for the zeta function, say the heck with the classes.
Yeah.
To compute a zeta function of a quadratic field at a million, I don't think, well, say 500,000.
So I could just divide.
I don't think that that would be so much worse than what you're doing.
So that basically,
that would give you magical value at minus whatever.
Well, and also, I should be able to compute this by what coefficients are taking quotient into zeta functions.
And then the ratio would be the quadratic one.
Yep.
There'd be no problem doing that. I just can't believe it.
Yep. No, I agree with that.
The L of n chi is hard to compute.
No, I mean, the reason I put this way, because I implemented this. I must have made a mistake. I mean, I implemented it a few hours ago.
The sign changes make your life worse.
I didn't think it was likely, but that's what I found. Here's the function right here. And I can.
I'm not sure whether you.
So if I just put in a little more code, I can have it show the. Let me make it bigger because it's hard to see.
It would be more than half. It would be.
So the consistency check that it's computing the right thing is that when I use this, it does give me the right
printing out essentially successive terms.
Yeah. Well, I print out the difference between two approximations, and these don't get small nearly as quickly as I would hope. So.
So when you put the same number of primes into an L of 1 chi as you do into zeta, the difference between approximations is worse.
This is what happens with this program.
Basically,
Again, it's entirely possible that somehow I messed up this program, although I can't see where at all I did, but it's possible.
What can cause that to happen?
Let me just try it. Maybe I'm just completely crazy.
Anyway, I'm working on it next week, so I'm going to see that.
Previous.
And one complicated thing is that the NSA can go.
Okay, so what this does is it. Here it. So what this does is it adds one other factor to the product. It's computing really the inverse of one. It's going to be 1 over zeta.
Okay. Right. I got
1 over L.
Well,
I
so for numbers.
So just by distributing one of the factors is chi of p over p to the n.
Somebody, if you
and
write a check,
the other factor is minus. Does that make sense? It's just.
I think it'll surely not be.
It's kind of clear if you write it down.
We might have a wonder, but I have a couple comments. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Thanks for your comments during the talk. So that's the thing I'm computing, and you can view it as adding in one extra factor. Say you wanted to put in one more factor, one minus I have two. To the minus n, you would take this number and subtract off the same number but multiply by that extra factor. And that's what's happening here. First, I'm making a new thing, which is the original thing multiplied by the extra factor, and then I'm subtracting off that. So it's this minus this times that. And I mean, of course, I could just multiply these things. That's just a way to make it slightly faster.
So when you're subtracting, it's just q to the minus n times the original.
Yeah, q to the minus n. So the difference between the two is q to the minus n times the original one. So that should be very, 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 very small, because q to the minus
n is really small.
You're certainly taking where q to the minus n is.
It looks like it should converge very quickly.
I'm
deeply puzzled. But I can just show you what happens. Test one. So I'll use 10 primes. Let's see. It doesn't. It should print out. So these are the differences in each case.
For prime, successive primes, one,
yeah.
Two, three, four,
yeah.
Five, or two.
Yeah, yeah. Four is not prime.
Well, I'm
going to
catch up and give some more time and run to it. I just have a couple of quick questions.
Okay.
I'll probably ask you next week.
Okay, excellent. See you later.
Let Peter get out with the abstract.
So here's one with, first the Bernoulli number that's being computed here is the generalized Bernoulli number where chi is the non-trivial character mod 3, mm-hmm. and I'm computing
B sub chi comma 3. Mm-hmm.
So that means, it's kind of dumb, I guess I'm evaluating at 3, which is not very big. Oh, maybe that's why this is so bad. Of course, it's going to be very bad when n is small, and in the examples I'm doing n is small.
Oh,
that's the whole. I was just the test examples I was doing had n small, and this algorithm's horrible.
You mean you're trying to find a million digits for L,
or even just a number
L of 2 or something?
Yeah, basically. Well, that completely explains the problem.
Damn it, difficult.
I would have liked to.